Kia ora. Welcome to Nerdman's Podcast, episode 258. Today is Thursday, July 14, 2011. Actually, I'm not sure I should mention what day it is, because there's no guarantee I'm actually going to post this in a timely fashion, or even at all, considering that I've recorded this episode. I think this is the fourth time, maybe the fifth. I started it about, must have been a week before last, and didn't have a chance to finish it, and then I went back and re-recorded it. Only I didn't like something about it, and I decided I was going to redo it, only I didn't get a chance to, because I got busy with work. All last week I was tied up with that. And then this week I've just been tied up with ordinary stuff. I think I'm busy being busy more than anything else. And so that's why I haven't been recording. I'm not pod fading or anything like that. Nothing's changed. I'm just quite busy. I did realize the other day, though, that what I should do is on the days when I want to record, I should just do that as my first thing in the day. Not literally the first thing in the day, mind you. But early in the day anyway, so that I can get it out of the way. Because if I wait and think, oh, I'll do it later in the afternoon after I finished everything else, inevitably I don't finish the everything else and I don't have time to record. So that's what I should do. Now, whether I will end up doing that or not, I don't know. Today, I left it to this afternoon and I already thought, I'm not going to have time to record. And I went to go to the grocery store, got all the way there to the shopping center, all the way, it's like 5 minute drive, 10 minute maybe. And I realized I didn't have my wallet. So I had to come home. Which is really unusual for me. You have no idea how unusual that is. But this morning, early in the morning, I had to move my car, and so I got my wallet because it's got my license in it, and I never drive without my license. I'm a good boy. And I forgot to put my wallet back in my normal trousers, my jeans. So I didn't have my wallet with me, and I couldn't do the shopping. So I came all the way home, and then I decided it's storming out, and I can't be bothered going back, so I'll do it tomorrow. And I'm recording instead. But speaking of stormy, we have had a time of it lately. It actually started last week, really, with the weather turning. But it's been storming for over a week now. And I'm getting really sick of it, I have to say. I don't think I have seen a winter as wet as this one in, well, a very long time anyway. Maybe ever. Maybe in all my years in New Zealand. I don't know. But it is very wet. The ground is saturated. When I took the rubbish up the other day to the top of the hill, the ground there was like, it was like walking on a very wet sponge. It was like when you're walking on the grass. And last week, I think it was, the workers were out mowing the lawn by our park. And they have this thing, it's sort of like a small tractor, really, with a mowing attachment on it. And it got stuck. And they had to have another one come and pull it out because it was stuck it had sunk into the turf. And I've certainly never seen that before. And we've been in this house for, 6 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it is. And so that's unusual. But it's rained every single day, at least part of the day, and some days, most days. And that's actually why this episode is called Stormy Weather, because we have had some really intense weather, especially further south of us. In the Waikato this morning, I think it was, they'd recorded 1,100 lightning strikes. And I'm thinking, who records lightning strikes? But apparently they do. And the Wellington region was hit fairly hard with thunderstorms and so on. So it's been pretty big deal. But hopefully this will end soon. But now, on to the next topic. Election Watch 2011.
Mr. Speaker!
Yes, it's time to start talking more about the elections because we're getting ever closer. We're only, about three and a half months away. July, August, September, October, no, better part of 4 months still. Anyway, things are getting interesting. The first thing that happened was that a couple weeks ago, we got our first genuine bona fide AstroTurf group. Seriously, we got our first fake group. It was set up to oppose MMP in the upcoming referendum. As you remember, in the coming election, we will be voting for members of parliament, and ultimately that will decide who forms government. And we also have a two-part referendum on our voting system. The first question asks, should we keep MMP, which is the voting system we have now? And the second question is, irregardless of how you voted on the first one, on that question, if there was to be a change, what system would you prefer? And you can choose first past the post, which is the old-fashioned system that is used in most of America, and used to be used in New Zealand before MMP, where whoever gets the most votes wins, even if it's only a tiny percentage of the overall total. and it's grossly unfair. And then there's a whole bunch of others. There's single transferable vote, which is used in our district health boards. There's preferential voting, which is used in parts of Australia. Supplementary member, which is kind of, which is first past the post with a few extra MPs tacked on, like MMP, only not nearly as fair and representative. And I've forgotten if there's any others. I'm probably missing one. But the point is that this fake group was set up to oppose MMP, and they weren't saying what it is that they supported. Well, it turns out that the people behind it, the main guy behind it, is the same guy who was opposing MMP way back in 93 or whenever it was that they passed the referendum to switch to the system. It was earlier than that, 91, 92, somewhere in there. Anyway, and he spent a lot of money. He's very, very rich, and he's very well connected with the corporate elites in the country, you know, the top business people. And they don't like MMP because it tends to deliver governments that they can't control. And under the first-past-the-post system, a minority government could be easily elected. When I say minority government, I mean that they got a minority of the votes, but they still took power, which has happened a few times. The most obvious, I think it was 1978 or something like that. I don't remember the exact year, but anyway, the National Party was elected with something like 38% of the popular vote. And this sort of thing happens, or can happen, in any election because we're a multi-party system. And it doesn't deliver a truly representative government like MMP does. So that's what they want. They want to destroy our current electoral system so they can get back to governments that they can control and have do their bidding, essentially. Well, this was all revealed. And then it turned out that one of the people who was in their supporters was a white supremacist. And it was all downhill from there. So they've sort of faded away into the background. And I still think that they'll probably set up another front group to try to make it look like it's grassroots opposition to MMP. I don't know that they're going to succeed because, first of all, MMP is really quite popular, but also because there's going to be suspicions about any group that comes along now and tries to say that it's against it. So that was our first little bit of excitement. But now we're moving, of course, into the – well, it's starting to get more into the election campaign. And there was a poll that was released by TV3, which is our other news channel. Well, it's not a news channel. It's a free-to-air TV broadcaster, but it's privately owned. And they did a poll, as they do, and found that the Green Party, is rising in support. And it certainly looks like it's coming at the expense of Labor. The poll was that National was up 2.1 points to 55.1% support, and Labor had dropped 22.9%. The Greens went up 2.6 points to 9.1%, and that certainly does suggest that they picked up at least a good number of the votes that Labor lost in terms of the poll support. Now, in the past, the poll has been kind of... Of course, they're barking. In the past, the polls have been kind of unreliable, these particular polls. They tend to exaggerate the support for National, for instance. So I can't be certain that this is necessarily legitimate. But the thing about it that does seem plausible is there is a general belief that, first of all, the Greens have been doing really well in Parliament. They've been applauded as being a better opposition than the official opposition. They have made some really good points in Parliament, admittedly on the losing side, because the government has the power, obviously, the votes rather, to get their stuff through Parliament. But they've just been doing really well, and they've been attracting the attention of Labor voters who are not necessarily terribly happy with the performance of Labor. They don't necessarily like Phil Goff, who's the leader, and they're a bit dubious about what to do. They're unenthused, let's say, put it that way. Well, the Labor has been talking openly in the past week or so about forming a formal coalition with the Green Party after the election so that they could form government. Now, the Greens, in the first MMP government in 96, the Greens were part of the Alliance, which is a left-wing group. In 1999, I believe that must have been when they were elected. I'm not actually sure, and I'd have to go back and check my records, but they split off from the Alliance, and formed their own went solo, basically, as the Green Party. And they won the Coromandel electorate, and that's how they got into Parliament. And they were in an informal arrangement with Labour. Now, mind you, they were not the brand new party, but they were newly independent, and they didn't really want to get too tied to a dominant party because they had they'd seen what had happened in the first MMP government under National when some of the minor parties just disappeared and exploded, and they didn't want that to happen. And they'd also already been part of the alliance, and so they didn't want to be subsumed again. And they've stayed independent since then in the next two terms of government for Labour. And although their general policy is that they will support the government of the day, whoever it is, on confidence and supply issues, they will oppose the government when they feel the need to. And this is, they have never been in a formal coalition with Labour. In 2005, I think, they were a campaign issue with the National Party, which at that time was led by Don Brash, who's now the leader of the ACT Party, saying that it was going to create an ultra-leftist government if Labour won, because they'd go into coalition with the Greens. Well, Labour did win that election, of course, and they did not go into coalition with the Greens, leftist or otherwise. And so that was that. But now, ironically, under a arguably more conservative leader than former Prime Minister Helen Clark was for the Labour Party, the current leader, Phil Goff, is talking openly about a formal coalition with the Greens. And they actually have a lot in common. The Greens actually have a lot of the policies that the left wing of Labour used to advocate until the Labour Party shifted rightward. And I, as a longtime Labour voter, I've voted Labour in all the elections I've been eligible to vote in since 1999. As a longtime Labour voter and former member of the party, I am not happy with where the party's at. I don't think they're taking a strong enough stand on some issues. I think that as I've talked about before, that they should not have been pandering to fundamentalist religious nut jobs, that sort of thing. But they have. And the Green Party hasn't. And the Green Party, I'm eventually going to do a blog post about my dilemma in this, because there's a lot about the Greens that I like. There's a few things I don't like. There's a lot about Labour that I like and a few things that I don't like. And I'm really torn on what to do. But the fact that Labour is now talking openly about a coalition with the Greens suggests that those of us who are unhappy with Labour and might be inclined, because I would always vote, but many people like me might be inclined not to vote at all, might be just tempted to give their party vote to the Greens, and so they're not throwing their vote away. But I don't know. This is going to be an interesting thing to watch in the weeks ahead, and it's something I'm still struggling with, because I have historically supported the Greens, Labour, and I'm reluctant to change my vote now, but I'm not really happy with where they're at, so I don't know what I'm going to do. But meanwhile, I mentioned the ACT Party under Don Brash, and he sort of became famous after he took over the ACT Party, the National Party, when he became leader of that party, by going to an area in North Auckland called Orewa, and he gave a speech to the Rotary Club there, which, if not actually racist, which I think it was, at the very least was race baiting, and he became famous for that, and all of a sudden he got huge attention, his poll ratings went up, and all kinds of things. And so he had this reputation for being racist, or at least race baiting. Well, his party just ran a series of ads in the papers, well, at least in the New Zealand Herald, I think it was in others as well. And the headline in big, huge type was, "Fed up with pandering to Maori radicals." And it goes on about all these white man's grievances, about how these Maori are supposedly getting special advantages and special treatment in front of the law. Yeah, so special that they live on average 10 years less than white people, that they tend to have worse health outcomes, they tend to be in prison, they tend to not get paid as much as white people. They have it really good, Don Brash, being sarcastic. So this guy, Ansel, said some incredibly racist things along the way, in addition to creating that ad. He said they were white cowards, and they were scared to tell the truth about this Maori issue because he was warning about the supposed modification of everything, whatever that means. But he said If you don't agree with the Maori radical perspective, you're branded a racist, which sounds an awful lot like a teabagger in America, the sorts of things that they say, because they say racist things, and then they say, oh, no, we're just disagreeing with the left. But he was asked how a radical was defined, and he said, people who want everything all the time. What does that mean? I mean, most people want everything, don't they? He says, yes, there were some confiscations that were unjustified. My reading of this issue is there are some legitimate grievances that should be settled and a number of other that are grossly overplayed for the purpose of extracting compensation. So he's saying that Māori are thieves and that the victimization that they suffered at the hands of the colonials primarily the 19th century was fine. There's nothing wrong with that. He's just crazy. And I'm trying to find the best quote of all. He was talking about the ACT Party, and he said, it's a men's party, sorry. It's a men's party. I can't get them to agree to that, but it's a party for men and women who think like men. It's Peter the Plumber from Pakuranga, and he would be electrified by that. Plumber electrified, that's funny. Anyway, it's not anti-Māori, but anti-modification, the relentless modification of every bloody thing in New Zealand. Well, he resigned. And the party, which was languishing in the polls before Don Brash took over, has stalled already and is very likely to go backwards now. Their only hope for getting in Parliament is if they win an electorate seat. And the seat that they most think that they're going to get is the one that's currently held by the former leader of the party, Rodney Hyde. It's an Auckland seat called Epsom. But there are several credible candidates vying for the National Party nomination. And if one of them actually gets the nomination and runs a credible campaign, he could theoretically take the seat away from ACT, and ACT would be out of Parliament, which would be one of the best things that could ever happen to New Zealand, because these people are fucking crazy. They are absolutely insane. But that's the excitement that's going on with the election these days. It's mostly stories that make me laugh more than anything, even the whole Ansel thing, because I can't believe that somebody would say so much that's so stupid and think that they could get away with it. But he apparently is an idiot. I don't know. Yeah. Well, those are the controversies that have been swirling around. But just today, there are two more things that have happened. I said that there was a special election in the Māori electorate of Te Tai Tokerau, which is basically Auckland North. And the special election was won by the guy who was currently the MP for that area, Honi Harawira, from a new party called the Mana Party. And he could legitimately be called a Māori radical. He comes from a long family of activists, in quote marks. And he says all kinds of stupid things. He called white people motherfuckers at one point. He said he wouldn't allow his daughter to date a white boy, and which is ironic because he apparently dated a white girl when he was younger. But he says some really those are not the outrageous things he says, by the way. But he won, and he was due to be sworn in again as the newly re-elected or elected or whatever. MP for Te Tai Tokerau. And the story from the Herald had it that he was basically ejected from Parliament, from the House today, because he refused to give the oath that is required by law, the oath or affirmation. You don't have to actually swear to God or anything, I don't believe. But there is a specific thing you have to say to be sworn in as an MP, and he refused. And the speaker said that he was happy for the affirmation to be read in Māori, but Harawira refused, and instead he started to read a page in Māori. The Herald didn't say what that page was, what he was reading specifically. But then there were 60 supporters, apparently, who were in the galleries, the public galleries, who started doing a waiata, which is kind of like a singing prayer sort of thing, when he left the debating chamber. And the speaker ordered them to stop, and of course the speaker's ruling is law, basically, in the House. Nobody can defy the speaker, and I think they were removed. I'm not positive of that, because that was before I started watching today. But one of the national MPs yelled at Jarauera as he was leaving, lack of respect, which is probably fairly true. But it started creating controversy, and the Green Party leader, Russell Norman, sought leave to have him have an opportunity to have another chance to take the oath, but the National Party objected to it, and that was it. So his next opportunity to be sworn in will be August 2nd, the next day that Parliament is sitting. And I don't know what's going to happen then. I don't know what he was playing at, because he must have known that he wasn't going to be allowed to do that. So he was playing for the cameras and his people, no doubt, his supporters rather. So I don't know if he's planning on doing it again and getting thrown out again, or if that was just a one-off stunt and he's going to do it correctly next time. I don't know, but it's going to be he's going to have a tough time with the upcoming election, because the turnout in the special election was really quite low, as you'd expect for a special election. And the Labour Party candidate had a really strong showing, and it's theoretically possible that they could come back and take the seat from him in the general election in November. But certainly if he keeps playing games like that, he's not going to endear himself to very many people. But anyway, but the bigger news today was that the Labour Party has unveiled a new tax policy. Among other things, they're going to introduce a capital gains tax of 15%, which will be I'll get to what it covers and what it doesn't in a minute. New Zealand is one of the few countries in the OECD, which is the developed countries basically, that doesn't have a capital gains tax. And many of them have exemptions for the family home, and this one will. The family home will not apply, and neither will personal property. So if you sell an expensive book or jewelry or something like that, none of that will be subject to capital gains tax. And they're also going to introduce a new top tax rate of 39 cents on the dollar, which will be for incomes over $150,000 a year, which is about 2% of the population. And they had done that in the past. They introduced a 38% tax rate for the top earners, but that at that time was for anyone earning over, I want to say $50,000, but it could have been that low. It must have been more than that. Anyway, whatever it was, because of inflation and so on, the number of people who were affected by this top tax rate quickly ballooned. It started out, I think it was like 5% or something, and quickly, in only a few years, became like 9% and kept going up. And so National changed all that. But the capital gains tax will be 15%, as I said. It will exempt the family home. They're also going to exempt properties in Canterbury for 5 years for some reason. Well, not for some reason. It's obviously to help them rebuild. It will apply to farms, which is, of course, the biggest industry in New Zealand, but not to the farmhouse or the section that it stands on, you know, the lot or whatever for the house. It will apply to shares for those who trade them on an occasional basis. And that's interesting. That one seems to be basically closing a loophole, because people who trade shares professionally already pay tax on their transactions. But people only do it every once in a while, pay no tax at all, and that's not fair. And so that's actually just closing a loophole. They're going to have some sort of special concession for older people who are long-term owners of small businesses, like, say, you know, mom-and-pop store owner who are going to sell their business to retire. The first $250,000 of their gains will be exempt from capital gains tax. And as I said, it doesn't apply to any personal property like art or books or jewelry or what have you. And they're expecting it will affect less than 10% of New Zealanders. Now, here's a bit of backstory to all this. Until recently, the biggest thing that New Zealanders invested in was property. And not just the house that they owned, they would buy rental property because the tax system made it too good to pass up. You could buy a house, say you bought it for $250,000, we'll say, and you ended up selling it for $350,000. But in the meantime, you had depreciated the house, and its book value, its tax value, or whatever you want to call it, was $200,000 by then. You would pay tax on the $50,000 that you wrote off, but not the other $50,000. So that $50,000 above what you originally paid for it was tax free, and the amount that you would pay tax on, that $50,000 between the book value and what you paid for it, was essentially a tax-free loan, an interest-free loan that was given to the owner over that time period. Now, the current national government changed that. They took away the depreciation rules, arguing that houses don't depreciate in the same way that business equipment does. Land certainly doesn't. And that it was a rort, they called it, to allow people to depreciate rental properties. And they were saying, you know, if the place is damaged, there are other ways that you can recover those things, because any maintenance that you have to do to a property is deductible from your taxes as an expense, and routine maintenance as well. And then, of course, insurance premiums are deductible and all kinds of things like that. And so, but they were still, as of right now, they are still exempt from capital gains tax. And so there's a really strong incentive for people to buy these rental properties, which also inflates the value of houses, which makes it harder for people to get into the housing market. So what this would end up having the effect of doing probably is probably reducing the value of houses, the cost of houses in New Zealand, which would be good for a lot of people entering the market, not so good for people who are looking to cash up now, say for retirement or something. But I think in the long run, it is certainly the way to go. It's not fair that people should be able to buy houses as an investment and then sell it and pay no tax on that income that they get from selling it. That's just not right, because if you were to buy a car, well, that's probably not a good example because they depreciate. Anyway, you never get back what you paid for it. Any other thing that you bought and then sold, normally you would expect to pay tax on the profits that you make. If you're in business making a profit, you would expect to pay taxes on your profit. But this is the only kind of business activity that I'm aware of in New Zealand where you can make a profit and pay no tax on it. And that's basically what it is that they're about to change. So that's all the election news. And now it's on to voice messages.
Hey, Arthur, this is Roger. I had a question for you. In this whole marriage equality issue in New York, but elsewhere, I suppose, too, I wanted to know what you thought of this whole argument about the economic benefit of marriage equality, of same-sex marriage. Because while it may be true, I think the argument tends to irritate me for some obscure reason. Not because it isn't true, but because I don't think that's the reason why you do the thing. I think you do the thing because it's the right thing to do. And the fact that there may also be economic benefit is sort of a sidebar, but it shouldn't be a primary function of the debate, as far as I'm concerned. But maybe I'm just cranky. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thanks, Roger. And if you're cranky, I'm cranky right beside you, because I don't like that line of argument either. And for mainly the same reason as you, that I think that it's the right thing to do and shouldn't get into any supposed dollar benefits, even if it's true. I don't really know what is gained by going down that route, because the people who are opposed to marriage equality are going to be opposed to it regardless of how, if it brought in trillions of dollars, that wouldn't persuade them, because they're opposed to it for more visceral reasons than rational ones. In fact, it's usually not for rational reasons. So that kind of argument, which is rational based, isn't going to carry any weight. So there's no point. The only thing I can think of is that making that argument provides cover for people who want to do the right thing, but they're afraid of backlash. And so it's kind of an excuse, if you will, for people like that to vote for marriage equality and to do the right thing. Not because they really think that that's necessarily the reason, the good reason for doing it, but because it's one they think they can sell to their constituents. And that could be a legitimate thing for some people, but it does, to me, smack too much of the kind of, well, the only reason we're going to give these people rights is because it's going to make us money, which is kind of like the only people who deserve to have rights are the people who are in the majority, or the people who have huge percentage of the population, and gay people are a tiny percentage of the population, so of course they don't deserve any rights. That's a related kind of argument that gets dragged into this sort of thing. So I'm with you. I don't like the argument. I think it's pointless, but that's the only reason I can think of why it actually could be used legitimately to provide cover for some politician who wants to do the right thing and can't figure out how else to sell it to his constituents. So I don't know if that helps, but yeah. And on to the next message. I wonder who this one's from.
Ride a bicycle will solve all your problems. Bye.
That was, of course, again, Roger. And what he's referring to is the health issues that I was talking about before. And I agree with you that riding a bike would be helpful, but that ain't going to happen either. And there's a couple of reasons. First of all, TV drivers scare me shitless, and I don't really want to share the roads with them. But the bigger reason is that I don't handle hills well walking, and I can't even imagine trying to bicycle up some of these hills. And that actually gave me an idea for a video podcast I'm going to do very soon when the weather stabilizes a bit and there's a bit of sun so you can see things. I'm going to set up a camera in my car and drive up some of these streets so you can see what I, or down in some cases, so you can see what I'm talking about how hilly the area where we live is. The Auckland region generally is really hilly, but the North Shore where we live is particularly hilly. So I'm going to go and drive around some of these streets to give you a taste of what it is like where we live, which is actually could be interesting for other reasons, not just because of the hills, but also because those of you who have not been to New Zealand might like to see what kind of a typical area in, well, the North Shore anyway, is like. So I will be doing that soon. It may actually be a few weeks before the weather stabilizes enough. And I was thinking today when I was driving down one of these hilly streets that I would actually like some leaves to be out because people have planted some deciduous trees and they're, of course, bare this time of year. But that is something I'm going to do. And one of the reasons I haven't done more video podcasts or videos on YouTube or whatever is because I don't have any topics. And, I mean, some of these people you see on YouTube, we do these videos all the time, and they've got all these great topics and ideas and things. And I think, where do they get these from? And I don't have those kinds of ideas. And that's the main reason I haven't done any video podcasts or videos for YouTube. So if there is anything that you'd like to see or like me to show you, let me know. You can leave a comment on this episode. You can email me. You can do whatever you like. But I wouldn't mind having some ideas. Although I should say, and I've mentioned this before, that I'm planning on tagging the videos separately so that, well, a whole bunch of things I'm going to end up doing with the tagging. But the idea basically is that if I do a lot of these video podcasts that people who don't want them for whatever reason can get just the audio, and I suppose people who just want the video could get that, or people who want everything can get everything. But that's coming up in the future, and I will certainly talk about that before all of that happens. But that is coming. And now I have another phone message.
Hey, Arthur, this is Tom. Just wanted to give you a quick call. Tom, a.k.a. the Ramble Redhead. Just wanted to give you a quick call to say that I had a marathon of your shows today, and I enjoyed them quite a bit. And I just thought I'd give you a quick call and say I thought our gas prices were crazy, but equivalent to $6 over here versus what you're paying, yuck. So that's no good. And I just thought it was very interesting, all the political stuff. And I was wondering if you had any update about that guy that was allegedly going after that younger guy. I was just wondering what was going on with that, if you heard anything new. And maybe you have, and I haven't got caught up yet, but I was curious about that. And I also thought I would say that when Kyle called about the road to Hana, I actually did that. And yes, that is the most curvy, craziest road. And it took freaking forever. And so if Kyle was behind us, yeah, we were going slow because we wanted to live. Okay, Kyle, just get over yourself. Okay. But anyway, I just wanted to call to say hi. I love you. And I really wish that you would tell people about the time that you came to Chicago and that we actually met you and that we're the only podcasters that you have met. I just wish you'd finally stop hiding the secret and just tell the story already. It really hurts my feelings. Okay? Okay. But anyway, I love you, buddy. You be good. And hugs to Nigel and the puppy dogs and the kitty cat and all that good stuff. So take care. Wait.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. I have no idea what you said at the very end of that because I couldn't hear it, couldn't make it out, but thanks anyway. And I thought I had talked about what happened to Darren Hughes, but I may have meant to and forgot, or I don't know, since I end up re-recording these episodes so many times, anything's possible. But in case I didn't, the gist of the story is that the police determined that there were no charges to be laid. And that means that obviously he doesn't have to answer in court. And that doesn't necessarily mean that nothing happened. It doesn't necessarily mean he didn't do something wrong. It just means that there's nothing that they can prosecute. So in the time since then, there has been a question about, well, could he return to Parliament? And the short answer is no, not now anyway, because he's not on the Labour Party list for the upcoming election and he's not an electorate candidate. So obviously he can't be elected in this coming term. But even the leadership of the party says give him some time off and then he can come back in a future election, maybe in 3 years' time, maybe 6 years' time. But he's only 32, so, you know, in 3 years' time, he'll be 35, 38, 3 years beyond that, which is still relatively young for a politician. So there's no reason why he can't come back at some stage. And if he is gay, I hope he comes out, partly because he'll be much happier if he does, but also because obviously that's not a problem for Labour voters or voters generally, because we've certainly have had and do have openly gay and lesbian MPs. Some of them are electorate MPs. Some of them are list MPs. So, you know, it's not a major issue. So, yeah, that would be nice. But he still does have a future, I think, because he was a very capable and able member of Parliament. And I, for one, would certainly like to see him back there. I think the country would be better for it. But, yes, be that as it may. This week, this is kind of indirectly related, is the 25th anniversary of homosexual law reform, which was the law that essentially repealed the sodomy laws in New Zealand. It was never illegal for women to have sex with each other, but it was illegal for men to have sex with each other. And because of that, anything associated with being gay was technically not illegal exactly, but it put one in a dangerous position, and it did leave people open to blackmail and all kinds of things. And 25 years ago this week, the bill to repeal all that finally passed Parliament over the objections of the radical right and so on. And I really should do a special – I should have already done a special episode just about that, but I've been so busy I haven't had a chance to do anything. But it was a remarkable thing. There was another companion bill that would have outlawed discrimination against gay people. That did not pass Parliament. So this was in 1986. If you think about it, in 1985, the year before then, it was illegal for men to have sex with each other. And technically speaking, it was illegal for men to be gay, you could say, because, you know, even associations of gay people were problematic. There were no civil rights protections of any kind. Within 20 years, there were civil unions, civil rights protections. The bad laws had been repealed. And now, a few years further on, we're talking about the final little bits and pieces to tidy up, like adoption law and also a marriage equality. So New Zealand has moved fast on these issues. And I think, if nothing else, it should give hope to some of the backward places in other parts of the world, including some U.S. states, which are horrible at the moment. It is possible for them to change and to change quickly once they put their mind to doing the right thing. So I suppose that is one of the lessons that can be drawn from the whole New Zealand experience. Tom mentioned the call from Kyle from Hawaii, and he actually left us another message today, actually two messages. The second one was to tell me not to bother to play it because he was referring to something I said on another podcast, and it's not really about this podcast, which is true, but I still might return to that later on, Kyle, if that makes any sense. But it was a lovely call. Thank you for that, Kyle. And I also wanted to say about that the podcast he was referring to is called This Week in Gay, which is hosted by Anthony from Ashanti No Lemon. And I was on the first and second episodes. I couldn't be on the third because they were predicting tornadoes for Auckland, and I had to quick get some stuff sorted outside. There was some building debris that was still left from when the decks were built, and I needed to get rid of that so it didn't, you know, get picked up by winds and thrown into the house. We ended up not having any bad storms that day. I didn't know that was going to happen. So naturally, I wanted to take advantage of the calm weather to get the work all done, and so I couldn't record with them. But they now have three episodes out, and I, as I said, was on the first two. And you can check them out at thisweekingay.com. Over on my site, amarinspodcast.com, I have a link to the first one. I should actually add one for the second as well. So you can certainly follow those to get to the show if you want. And I'll, if I haven't, maybe by the time you hear this, I will have added them to my podcast roles on my blog and, what do you call it? Podcast site. Because it should be there. I'm just thinking, oh, I've got to do that too. Add it to my list. Which actually, I've been meaning to say this for a long time. Any podcasters who are listening to me, if you're not listed on my roles, it's not that I'm deliberately not putting you there. It's because I'm lazy about updating my links. And just let me know, and I will add you forthwith. But don't assume anything negative by an absence, because of an absence. It's just that I'm lazy, and I haven't gotten around to it. Because in the overall scheme of things, it's not one of my more important priorities. It's certainly not as important as getting around to recording, which I obviously don't do very much of either. Although I might do more audio boos. Timmy Sims has been doing quite a few of those, for instance, and Veritable Virgo has done some, and Brother Sinatus has done quite a few, several others. They're like mini podcasts, and in weeks when I'm especially busy, I think I might do those. Whether I send them to the podcast feed or not, I don't know. We'll see. But that is it for today. It's probably it for this week, because tomorrow's Friday, and I generally don't podcast 2 days in a row, and I doubt I'll do any over the weekend. But hey, you just never know. You just don't know. But actually, you probably do know. You probably know I won't. But but I will be back next week. I don't have anything major on next week, so there's no reason why I can't record. So that is it for today. Probably it for this week. Do let me know if there's any particular topics you want me to do a video about. Or for that matter, if you want me to do an audio podcast, you can feel free to send questions in to me. I'm more than happy to take on any subject. I don't promise to know the answers, but I promise to at least try to find out the answer. That is it. I will talk to you soon. Have a great weekend. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.